Yeah. Sounds like a lying ass bitch trying to take a good man down.
Yeah, he's really on top of the world, especially after the palace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let my man be.
All right, shall we do it?
Okay.
Welcome back, friends.
Oh, yeah.
So we're back in the movie review corner, whatever number this is, 5 or something. I don't know.
We've done a lot of movie reviews, and this one is going to be our best.
It's true. Today we're going to talk about two movies that in different moments use varying aspect ratios, and we'll talk about how one of them does it right and one of them does not.
Yeah, hey, Will, per a group chat not long ago, you want to give us your thoughts on Furiosa?
We don't have enough time, do we?
We can make time.
No, I mean, really, all it is for me, it's the same as Fury Road. I don't think they're bad at all, but I just think if we lived in a world where there were any good action movies, they wouldn't be that exciting. I think they're good, but I don't see the great. Like, I don't know.
So you're judging it against an invisible stack of movies that don't exist.
No. I'm saying I get everyone's enthusiasm because there's nothing to be excited about if you like action films in a long time. But if you love action films and you've seen lots of them, both of these to me just are not at the top of the list.
Wow.
I don't know. They're good. Like, I enjoy them, but I don't know.
What studio is paying you for these takes?
Who put those out?
Who put these? Yeah, I want to know who's
paying you for
this kind of shit. Because yeah, dude, if they're giving you money, give it to us. You can share it with me. I will gladly trash it too for money. Folks, Will doesn't mean what he says. He's clearly on the take with someone. We're all confused by this as well.
I don't know. They just don't excite me. They don't.
Do you agree with Will? Call in.
Yeah, we have a landline now for live call-in on the show.
We'll figure it out one day. So someone can trash you for such a ridiculous response.
They're fine. They're good movies. They're good movies. They just don't get me sweating, you know, like a lot of his movies do.
Okay. Well, that's enough of that trash. We don't need to hear any more of that. Let's move on.
But I will say, as I do with all things that lots of people whose opinions I respect really go apeshit for, I will continue to reassess these every couple of years. And then maybe someday it'll click and then I'll understand. You know, hey, we've had a lot of that on this show, a lot of reassessment. And hey, if I came around on a fucking Forrest Gump and American Sniper, I don't think it should be difficult with some Mad Max.
I mean, you said it just now, so there's not much else that needs to be said other than that. So
maybe someday I'll get it. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about one of Will's favorite movies of the year and another of his favorite movies of the year.
Yeah, this is just neck and neck for spot number one of the best movie of the year today, for sure.
So let's talk about the good ones. So we're talking about two movies today, one good, one bad. Maxine, the third film in the Very Rushed trilogy from Mr. T. West.
Well, it doesn't feel rushed, though, so.
Well, not as rushed as the second movie we're going to talk about. One Bertrand Bonello's Le Bête, aka The Beast.
The Beast.
Which one of these movies was not thought through enough?
Which one was thought through to a level that is truly staggering, and which one is about as chunky as the cocaine they keep doing close-ups of in the movie?
That's a lot of chunky cocaine.
It's truly, every time I was like, oh my god, you poor queen. Like, because I'm sure it's B12 or whatever, but I was like, cut that shit up a little more. That hurts.
Yeah, that gave me anxiety.
Well, especially that last one, because it's funny too, because she takes it and then it cuts to in front of her and her head is back and you can see the chunk sitting there.
Well, knowing what we know about Miss Mia Goth, who likes to abuse people on set, it wouldn't shock me that she was fucked up on. You know, I'll tell you this much: Mia Goth can kick me anytime.
Well, I was going to say, despite what we're about to say about this movie, Mia Goth can abuse us on set anytime she wants.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I'll give her a little shire right back.
Good morning.
Yeah, so
John's hat's on sideways. You guys can't see it, but it's a camo KC hat and it's on sideways. So that's the kind of jokes we're gonna get today.
Yeah, we're feeling some sort of way this morning. Okay, so let's get to Maxine. We're all dying to talk about it. It's Brat Girl Summer film embodied. Like it's giving so much brat that it like makes me feel queenie.
Yeah, so much brat that by the end it's almost not actually about Maxine's glow up at all.
Let's start off. What was that movie about?
What was that movie about? Religion, I guess.
I'll say one thing. I do think to start this off, and this will lead into a later episode that'll come out with a friend of ours, but the Twitter machinations are really pumping hard for the hate of Maxine. I will say right off bat, it ain't the worst movie that's ever been made.
Oh, no, it's not the worst movie we've talked about.
No, people need to chill the fuck out. Like, it's, you know. It is what it is, but I do think people are getting like motherfuckers that like praised Everything Everywhere All at Once, being like, this movie sucks. Stinkerino. You don't have to impress us all with you just identified a movie that's not good. We all saw it. And conversely, to those working too hard to say it's that movie of the year, you need okay. to rehydrate.
Yes, it is. It is A-okay. You know, I mean, it's fucking Ty West. You know what you're going to get, which is a really, I would say, cheap blender that you bought at the fucking Goodwill that barely works. And then you toss in a bunch of movies that you love. And it kind of blends them, but not really, because what comes out is... It's not a smooth liquid. It doesn't really go down super smooth. It's a pretty clunky pastiche, I guess, is the Ty West MO.
Yeah, it had a very impressive trailer.
The trailer was good.
The trailer betrays what the movie actually is, but we don't need to get into actually, you know what? We will get into spoilers on this one because I'm sure you've seen Maxine. Yeah. And if you haven't, then these are not, you can come back to these, but I don't think you're going to like,
you know, it'll either help you hate it more or love it more. So,
yeah, I don't think anyone's going to go into Maxine being like, they told me what happened.
Also, guess what? Because again, it's a Ty West movie. You know what's going to happen as soon as it starts.
Yeah. Like a Ty West movie. Even good ones he can't stick the landing. So
stop trying to have a quote unquote twist, my dude, please.
Yeah.
Fucking story.
Yeah. I mean, his greatest moment we've seen is still how the everything but the last 20 minutes of House of the Devil.
Yep. And then 45 minutes of Innkeepers, I would say.
45 minutes of Innkeepers. I remember kind of liking his Western.
Yeah, that one's pretty okay, because he's not trying to, do twists and shit as much.
Yeah, so. I mean, where do we attack this movie? So, one, I'll say I was shocked that this movie feels, despite her being in every scene, I don't know why Mia Goth was in this, I mean, other than she's the character, but it's like, just kind of a lack of scenes with her to do anything, and then when a big moment you think she's gonna like be a great actress, which she is, she just kind of reacts and like just does, like, I don't know, it felt like now that A24 is moving to an auteurless model and they're trying to make big budget movies to compete with the likes of the major studios, part of me wonders, they were like, hey, things are changing over here. If you want to make this, you got to make it now. And
yeah. Like, you have to write it today, and then you have to start shooting next week is what this movie feels like. Like a one-day script for sure.
Yeah, there are a lot of elements in this movie that are swirling around that you want to see come together. Mm-hmm. Not being a hater, there was enough that I was like, I could see how this would come together. It does feel quite evident that a couple rounds of drafts could have helped this movie, because there's just things that, I mean, there's things that happen that just feel like quick ways to end a problem, to end a storyline, and not like things that you think are going to connect that don't, but not like in a way that's interesting. It's just, it feels a little haphazard. Like, it has a delirious kind of like rush to it. It doesn't, I will say, it doesn't like drag.
No, it moves. It moves, but it moves so fast that you get new characters every couple minutes that never come to anything. And then, you know, then you get a procedural started that never really comes to anything. And you get a serial killer started, or kind of a giallo, I guess, because there's gloves started, but it never really comes to. It's just a lot of that where, agreed, like, never bored watching it. But also it's, you know, empty calories.
For sure. And it tries these like tonal shifts that I think to... Maybe someone in the audience on some of that chunky cocaine, not saying I know anyone who was under said substance at the screening I was at, who said to me, wasn't that so fun? And I was like, I bet. I bet that was fun.
I bet
it was a great time watching that movie.
It really is just coked out, because in the same way, if you've ever been around people who are coked out and you are not, it's very confusing very quickly, even though it's exciting, you know, yeah. Like, they're gone so fast, and sometimes like awesome shit is brought up, great ideas. But then before you can even grasp why that was exciting, there are 25 more. I don't know if I've seen a contemporary movie that feels this much like cocaine, but I don't mean in the way they wanted it to. You know what I mean?
Oh no, this is like a stepped on bag that's going to really hurt your nostrils. But you have it, and you paid too much for it, and now you gotta, everyone's taking a trip to the bathroom.
Well, this is what happens when friends visit from LA, and they're like, you guys have coke in Chicago, right? And we're like, well, kind of, but you gotta finish the bag.
In name only. Which is a great reminder, kids, folks, cocaine will only make you think that Maxine's a good movie.
A great movie. Good is fine. I don't give a shit. But yeah, it'll make you think it is one of the best movies of the year.
Hey, these haters gonna hate Daddy. Maxine Cook.
Our buddy Jim of Cinematic Void, he saw it at Tarantino's second theater, the Vista. And it was great, because he was like, man, I think they fucked up, because I know they love to show their film trailers, which is cool. But he was like, you shouldn't show a 35mm trailer of Vice Squad before this movie. Not that I was going to like it anyway, but man, you can't just remind me of a great sleazy movie about LA that this movie lifts from right before it. Bad idea. So I guess don't watch it at the Vista if you're in LA, if you're trying to like it.
No. Ooh, this is a good one. Some guy named Corey with a spooky ghost says, wake up, babe. New personality just dropped.
Oh my God. Fucking Christ. This is why I'm happy to be old. God damn. I don't want to keep up anymore.
You can try out all the new words you've learned. You can try them all out on this movie, because this movie is perfect for that, because it is a blank canvas in which you can ascribe whatever you want to it. One thing that the cardinal sin of this movie is trying to remind us of body double ad nauseum, like to the point of like you're like, now you're just perfectly like, you're hurting yourself so bad. Mm-hmm. Oh God. Okay. I can't read these people on fucking Letterboxd. This has got to be one of the most horrific things I've ever seen. But yeah,
what someone said, or is that what you're saying about reading the reviews?
It's just everyone just being like, it is everything. Like, I don't know. It says it's a perfect, listen, we are in a place in this world where, we are celebrating women on Twitter who go viral for saying that they spit on dicks. You know what I'm talking about with this shit?
No.
Okay, yeah. I'm sad I don't know it, but there's this person that is being called the Hawk Tua girl.
Oh.
Okay. You've probably seen the name. It's just like this stupid thing with this girl.
Oh, okay. That's what I've just been seeing that phrase a lot, and I was like, why the fuck is everyone okay, there we go.
Yeah, and like now she's getting a TV deal for a reality show
an interview or something. She just said,
yeah, it's just like one of those on that, like random on the street, like let's grab some young kids while they're partying and like get them to say funny stuff. Like my point being, Maxine Mia Goth's character fits in perfectly to a world bereft of anything like real to get excited about. So like cocaine, we blow ourselves up on a fake substance and be like, I am having the best fucking time.
Yep.
And it's sad. Like this movie just kind of made me sad when I saw it, because like, one, it's reminding me of Body Double, and it really wants to be Body Double.
So that
ending, I was like, even more so, I was like,
well, because I think my guess is what happened. Genuinely, I think you're very much on point where A24 was like, shit's changing, get on it right now or it's gone. And so he did a bunch of blow and like watched a bunch of movies and then just wrote it down really fast and then turned it in. And they were like, cool, good enough.
Yeah, I'll take an element from The Howling. You know, I'll take the red porn scene from The Howling. We'll take we'll take a lot from Body Double. Like the whole idea. The funniest was someone trying to tell me the movie is satire, and it was like, we have different senses of humor, I think. But
I just, well, like I said, when you told me that, I'm all ears. One instance where the movie's satire, pretty pleased.
Oh, yeah, call in. Movie satire. We would be happy. Listen, I'll tell you one thing for Patreon people, you want to send us a response and say that we don't know what we're talking about.
We love it.
And we hate gay people and women because we dislike this movie. We will happily respond to you in a non-pithy manner. And maybe we'll read it on the show.
That's true. We will. We should start. We'll take an idea from one of our buddies. Let's do that. If y'all want to write in shit, we'll read it on the show.
We just can't guarantee when the episode will drop, but you know.
Could be 3 years from now, could be yesterday, and you missed it.
But it's more fun that way. let's see. What else? Because we're just kind of saying that this movie stinks. We should really get into, like, I mean, yeah, the script really doesn't work, and I think that's...
And that's the biggest thing, because, again, like, even though Mia is also clearly rushed and not given stuff to chew on, she still does a very, you know, very commendable job trying to carry this thing. But to me, it's the, like, all of the script, but the biggest part is that in the end of this movie, especially after I watched it the second time, I was like, this shit is not about Maxine, man.
But it wants to be in a hollow way, in this, like, we're capitalizing on the turning into scenes from X and Pearl, and we're like the memification of those scenes, and we're going to take this idea of her and then we're going to like drill into this, like, Maxine Meeks, fuck yeah, what a star, to the point where they have to do that so much throughout the movie to remind you that, like, do you remember what, you know, because it's like you have to see all the first movie to even know what the fuck is like going on. I don't think there was any connection to Pearl technically in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, they mention, like, when what? Because I think that, isn't that what, like, Kevin Bacon says on the phone when he first calls her? Like, he mentions the Pearl thing, but I think that's it.
I think that's it, yeah. I mean, it's like, you have to remember, like, kind of things about X, and, yeah, okay, so this, yeah. the reveal of the movie is this wholly unmotivated scene of her being like, I'm going to go find out what's going on at this like house that I have written down where my friends have disappeared simply because a cop told me like, you gotta help people in trouble. Whereas we have these unmotivated moments of Maxie like squashing a guy's balls to the point.
That scene, I thought I imagined it the first time I watched it. I was like, that's like it, because it's so, it, I don't know, it plays like a fake scene from a movie that's supposed to be in this movie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, maybe here they'll ramp it up into some crazy vibe where you're like, you know, I was like, all right, maybe that's seems a little forced. The Buster Keaton joke was, to hear so many people laugh at that, I was like, this is why I need to bring the Colt 45 to the theater so I can stand up in the back of my seat and wave it at everyone.
Oh.
And it just has a little flag that comes out that says, bang, you're a f-, but it's
well, it's exactly that. I mean, you're hiding it with the Buster Keaton joke as well, and that whole scene, because again, it's just such an empty, undeveloped idea. It's just literally someone going, oh my god, it'd be funny if it was a Buster Keaton impersonator, because we're in Hollywood, which they also remind you nonstop, including like five wide shots of the Hollywood sign to clearly fill time at the end of the movie. That was nuts. I was like, wait, we're literally just going to keep cutting back to a wide shot of the sign. We know we're there. Like, we know we're there. But every part, every scene feels like a potentially good idea that never got talked about past its, you know, its like very beginning of birth. Oh, it might be cool if. Cool. Done.
It reminded me, like, I'm sure he recently purchased a copy of Fade to Black.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, boy, someone's got a Vinegar Syndrome subscription. And speaking of which, if you have a Vinegar subscription, might you pick up a copy of They Call Me Macho Woman?
You should.
Their brand new release that I think comes out very soon, because...
I'm shipping soon.
Why should they check it out?
Well, because if you want to hear us gab in a different format, you can hear a brand new audio commentary track from your boys.
Right. We
we got lucky too, I will say. You'll hear on, I think we just said it literally on the commentary, but at one point we stop and just say like, also, if there's interviews with everyone from the movie and they're covering everything we talk about, we're sorry because we don't know. But guess what? There isn't, except for the cinematographer. So it should be an actually pretty worthwhile listen for you.
Yeah, no, it was fun. We had a fun time. So if you want to hear...
We hope you all buy it too, so that they do indeed follow it up with Parole Violators, and we can really cook on that one.
Yeah, I mean, like, I will say what's special about this is not only we talk about that, we get into a little Chicago movie history too.
That's true.
In terms of the owner of said Vinegar Syndrome. So you want to know all about where Vinegar Syndrome started, technically, you listen to this one.
Yeah.
There's fun little anecdotes in there. But truly, thanks for everyone at VS for thinking of us. So.
Yep, and loose thread, just because it's fun, because we're talking about L.A., we got to shout out the tech director at the American Cinematheque because he helped make this happen. So thank you very much, Ben. We appreciate you.
Yeah.
Ben is married to Claudia, who works for Vinegar Syndrome. So it all worked out.
We love them all. You work at Vinegar Syndrome, we love you. Work at any of those labels, you know? If you're someone we know who works for one of the sub-labels called Music Box Films who loved Maxine, we're very sorry for this episode.
I don't think... there are, I think, exactly two people who work for Music Box in any capacity that listen to our shit, and that is not one of those two. So. Zing.
Zinging. Yeah. It's a spicy morning over here. Yeah, spicy but...
On that note, since we're doing a little promo, we got some upcoming screenings. Then the closest one, if you're in Denver, speaking of Vinery Syndrome, we're teaming up with Vinery Syndrome and Scream Screen and the C Film Center. And of course, Severin, as always, to bring Francomania to you on July 20th with a triple feature of Virgin Among the Living Dead, Vampiros Lesbos, Night of the Skull. Plus, there will be a battle royale between home video companies in the lobby. We'll be slinging discs. Teresa will be slinging discs.
And then Joe and David are going to fight it out.
They're literally going to fight with swords.
Like we're giving
proper,
them
proper katanas.
No, let's give them the bats with like the nail in them.
Oh no, they just both get the spike helmet from Macho.
Oh, there you go. They
have to just try to stab each other with their foreheads.
That would be awesome. Like battling gear. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Day after that, we'll be at the Archive, which is Vinegar Syndrome's brick-and-mortar store in Aurora, Colorado, doing a Severin Films pop-up, where we've been given the green light for truly horrifically low deals. So come through and we'll hook your ass up. After that, on July 25th, we are going to be back with Trustfall number 2 at the Davis Theater. If you were at the first one, we know you'll be back for the second one because everyone fucking lost it for the movie and you will this time as well. And then after that, on July 28th, we will be at the Music Box for 2 sold out shows of Rap World with Connor O'Malley and AD Bryant and everyone else almost involved in that incredible movie. In person, that's going to be sick. And then July 31st, we'll be back at the Music Box for a highs and lows of Miss 45 and Coffee. So if you were watching Maxine and you were like, huh, maybe a little Miss 45 got mixed into this too, come watch the real thing.
Yes, we'll show you the difference between a movie that's been well thought through, has it's shaped away any like superfluous elements, and is just a perfect... You know.
And just to connect it, a movie also made under the influence of drugs, an even harder one called Heroin, but still came out as good as it did. So it's possible.
Ty West, get that spike in that vein. Do something. Do something more. Because you've faked us all out. He honestly has been the greatest fake career of my
that
life.
Is, I will give him credit, is that he has continually gotten that bag. Tricking us all into thinking we're finally gonna get a great movie out of him.
He fooled me every time.
Every time.
Every time.
You get excited, and it's because, to be fair, House of the Devil is the best one, and I guess it's smart that he's never done anything better. But
well, X had elements of like, yeah, this you could have made like a really great slasher film. Yes, the old makeup's kind of silly. The whole what it tries to wrap together is the problem. So that one problem of X is the whole problem of Maxine. Like
he took the thing that kept X from being pretty fucking good and stretched it out to a whole movie of its own.
Yeah, I really thought this would just be a standard slasher and was really looking forward to like to that. But we digress. Yes. So the ending, if you want to know our thoughts on that, boy, my man still thinks it's like Religious has just come out. He says people are scared of Christians.
It's so, and also how poorly, like clearly again, the speed of this, when you get to the finale and you know, her crazy, it's revealed that her crazy father is the one trying to, you know, help all these women that she works with in the sex industry by killing them because they wouldn't accept God. He couldn't cure them. He also has this weird crew of followers that we also don't know anything about, but it is so painfully clear, just friends and people on set in robes. It's crazy. I was like, oh my God, guys, come on.
Yeah, I thought, I was like, that's a crew member.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no atmosphere at all in that. It's just like, quick, grab all your friends. We're going to go up into the hills real quick and keep thinking about body double.
Yeah. In his mind, I think he envisioned a dreamy sort of thing of Maxine. Because there, I will say this. In his mind, it seems like there was something almost Italian about that scene. In that there's no logic. And this is a good example of how to do a movie logicless. And, you know, it's like you think that without motivation, she's going to go to this place and it's going to be atmospheric. But of course, it's the place from Body Double. So you're like, don't do that. Don't do that. Because all I'm thinking about is that fucking guy looking through the peephole and spraying those plants. And I would rather watch that scene 1,000 times over. But he does send her there. And then there's this whole door of like, you know, again, it all could have worked in a more deliriously dreamy fashion, but instead it wants to be both things. It wants to be a rote procedural that hits all the notes of like these latest Scream movies, you know, and like honestly a episode of CSI. And then it wants to have this like we're bringing back Jalos.
Well, that's how biggest fucking issue, because he can't fully commit to anything, right? Because if we're thinking about shit like Vice Squad and Miss 45, you have to be in that aesthetic, you have to be in that mood and that actual place for that shit to work. But instead, like you said, he's supposedly set a movie in the 80s, but it's fucking CSI episode as far as what the cops do and how they talk. Like it's all like 90s television, but supposedly in this like gritty 80s setting. It's so silly.
Yeah, I thought that he would apply, because like with X, he tries to apply a kind of like grimy, faded film stock, you know, thing, whatever. With Pearl, he does the worst of that insanely stupid digital Technicolor. Martin Scorsese, but what are you thinking? Does your daughter, do you love your daughter and you're supporting your daughter's taste? Is that what's happening? I don't know, but not saying that like his daughter's an idiot. I'm just joke, speculation. You know, like in this though, you think like, because there's that one scene in the peep show thing, which, you know, was one of the most best visual moments with the music. It makes you think
good. When he breaks it, it's actually good. It hits.
Made me think of The Howling, of course. Like, I guess cruising. But the thing it's trying to be is this kind of New York Ripper aesthetic. But it doesn't do anything with it. When it goes to the procedural scenes, it looks like anything shot on Netflix.
Yep.
And that's where I was puzzled, because I'm like, I thought you were trying to apply like a certain aesthetic to everything, but I guess not. I guess that went out the window with this movie. And
well, it's just like when he did that interview before X was coming out, because it was originally going to be shot on 16, right? And we were excited. Mm-hmm. We're like, cool. Makes sense with this setting. But then he abandoned it and just used that digital filter because I think he said something like, well, where we were shooting, man, like out in the sticks, we couldn't see the dailies if we shot it on 16. And I was like, are you telling me really? You're that kind of filmmaker where you watch your dailies at the end of every day? I don't believe you.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I buy that he's a filmmaker who's passionate and like clearly loves movies, but I don't think that.
I don't know if he understands them though. Do you think he understands the movies that he loves? I do.
That could be the big separate thing to talk about between the two movies we're talking about today. Is like, what is this kind of true understanding of cinema? But more or less, and I'm not trying to get hoity-toity with it. I just mean like, what is this understanding of the movies you love, like giallo slashers? I mean, I know people have pointed this out on the internet, but it is true. There are very few giallos that stick the landing in the third act. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, but this is on another level of not sticking the third act. So don't act like you've seen every Carlos Saured or like fucking, you know, movie that has been put out, and we love Vinegar Syndrome in these forgotten. You know, like,
well, part of the fun, right? We've talked about it on here before. Part of the fun with giallo movies is, you know, enjoying the ride, and then at the end you're like, yeah, well, didn't stick it. Some great scenes though, you know. But yeah, even the bad ones, what they do nail most of the time is the aesthetic and a convincing environment and you know, actual solid tone throughout the movie that makes sense for the space you're supposed to be in. And that's That's why I think maybe he just doesn't understand the movies that he loves.
I think he's a fan. I think he's a big fan.
Absolutely.
But he sees it kind of superficially. Like, I think he does see things surface level. I mean, it's a movie, so he thinks probably, like, that's as far as I need to go, is I just need to deliver up this, and then, like, anything else will kind of maybe... I think it's that great thing, that's greatly stupid thing that I have done when I've written things, I think most people do, where you, like... You think if you can put all the right stuff together that somehow it's all just going to churn together without trying to like do the steps to work through motivation. And I'm sorry if this is too highbrow for people, but this is unfortunately the mechanics of how a movie goes together. You can't just do a bump and cross your fingers and think, fine. Like we can,
but it doesn't work.
Yeah, we do this in hope for better stuff, because again, a lot of things work in this movie, or well, a lot of things should work in this movie.
Yeah, because it's like what I imagine talking to him about, like Fulci would be, is he's like, yeah, man, I try to put that in all my stuff. Smoke, gels, yep. Slow motion, yep. And like, I think that's, like you said, that's all he sees, and he's never sat down and been like, what is it that makes us delirious when we watch those Fulci movies? Like, what is it that causes you to have that visceral, physical, and mental reaction when you're watching those movies? He forgot to do that part. He's just like, cool.
Because if you're not going to make a convincing script, which is hard to do. You're making a bunch of money, so I'm giving you a fucking pass on that. But it's like, you know, if you're going to like... Yeah, if you're going to commit to a deliriously hazy view of your story, then, yeah, I guess you do have to spend a little more time with those great European horror directors of that time and try to, like, on an alchemical level, like, understand the nature of a dream, of, like, cinematic dreams, which are in and of itself one and the same. So, like, how do you take all this like illogical things, but create a sumptuously visual, atmospheric, and just thrilling experience? And it doesn't seem to want to do any of those things. There's this weird like Hollywood satire of like the agent and stuff that I'm just like, supposed to connect. Like, I don't, or even like if it's not supposed to connect, how is it supposed to make us feel? Like, what is it supposed to provoke? Is it supposed to provoke us to be like, whoa, that's crazy. Laughter. The agent, he loves his client. Is it supposed to be the pithy, like, funny little lines that we're all supposed to laugh at in a theater? Like, I pity the person that watches this. Well, you. The person that watches this movie by themselves.
Yeah, twice.
It's one sad to see it in a theater and see so many people react to it, but like that's the only way you're gonna like be like,
yeah. Well, because I was thinking, I was like, does the audience burst out laughing the first time you see Giancarlo Esposito just because his hair is funny? Like, is that
they did.
A joke? Okay. Yeah.
They did.
I was curious about that. And I was like, do they cheer when random people they know from movies come on screen? Like, does everyone lose it that it's Kevin Bacon? I guess
they did. They like, it's funny that it's Kevin Bacon. They lost it at the ball smash.
Scene is so weird.
The best was when the Buster Keaton scene, someone behind me I heard went, that's pretty funny. Oh, now that's pretty funny. I get it. Buster Keaton. Again, a wholly unmotivated scene.
Yeah. Like, you know what that shit feels like, actually? It's exactly it. That entire scene, also because of its length, feels like one of the trailers that didn't get included when they put Grindhouse out.
Sure.
And so between fucking Planet Terror and Death Proof, that scene would have worked great for a trailer for a Grindhouse movie that doesn't exist. It would be funny. It would be awesome. It'd be stupid. Great. That's where that belongs. Not in a movie that doesn't make sense before and after it.
Yeah. Or else where is it trying to go? Like, I think of a scene in like one of our favorites, City of the Living Dead, if we're talking about Fulci. There's the scene where the kid that they all want, like you know, that they think is this person killing everyone. I forget his name, but you've seen this guy in all these movies, but he goes, he's like in that girl's car or dad's car, and the dad finds him in the garage and then just like kills him. And it's like, okay, that had nothing to do technically with the movie. But like, what could Fulci be trying to get at with that scene? Is it just sort of a surreal image that you don't think is coming? Or is he trying to get at like a certain moral rot within this town that might be the thing that like these demons catch hold on, or this, these whatever's going on? But when you try to apply that thinking to a movie like Maxine and a scene like the Buster Keaton scene, it's hard to imagine that there's a deeper subtextual thing going on other than like Hollywood, man. The 80s, when they were scared of heavy metal. Like, to think that it's cool to call into question the controversy of heavy metal is the whole problem of this movie.
Yeah, well, the way it starts, as soon as it starts with fucking Reagan and Satanic Panic clips, I was like, really? Okay. Yeah, we're aware of the 80s. You know, the two big things people talk about. Great.
Yeah. Oh, also, yeah. Last thing I want to complain about is the friend in the video store friend who they try to literally do a Scream thing for a moment. And you're like, don't do that. Don't do that.
Well, that dialogue. Oh,
don't do the Scream thing, please.
It's so rough.
The point that dialogue is rough because it's supposed to be a parody in Scream. It's not supposed to be like cool film guy talking about stuff. Yeah, it's wholly did not understand the material. Yeah,
and they try to, yeah, let's move on. But they try to also, like, again, without earning it or putting in any work for it to actually be achieved, they try to make that character like an emotional core for his death later. And it just comes off so stupid. And again, like, Mia Goth acting her ass off, trying so hard to weep in that scene. And she does, technically, but the movie doesn't. The movie doesn't do anything to help her with it, so it's so silly. You're like, yeah, I mean, he's dead. It sucks. He seemed nice.
Listen, if you're predisposed to like this movie before you've seen it, and you're already, like, you're making the Maxine t-shirt to wear to this the thing, I'm sure you'll figure out, you'll do the mental gymnastics to love it and get mad at people on Instagram when they don't. If you objectively look at movies, you will see a thing that is flawed and doesn't really work. But don't be one of these assholes just being like, it's the worst movie I've ever seen, because then you're portraying your own argument right there. And you're falling into the same trap of like, look, I also know it's bad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Successfully critique it with your friends and let them know that they can and should ask for more. Now, speaking of asking for...
Yeah.
Let's talk about asking for more here.
We're still gonna wait until this morning.
Yeah, we're gonna try to keep this short because like we just went really long on Maxine. And if you haven't seen this movie, we should try to do this in a way that doesn't spoil too much. But it's gonna be hard to do.
I don't think we can.
Well, we'll give it a shot. So we're talking about Bertrand Bonello's latest. And that is The Beast, which follows two pretty stellar efforts. I mean, Coma from 2020, great. Zombie Child, I think, was the year before, but didn't really come out till 2020. Fantastic. Nocturama, one of the best movies I've seen in a while.
House of Tolerance,
amazing, except for the eyes leaking cum.
Oh, come on, have fun.
I don't like eyes leaking cum. It's too, that's a Maxine move if I've ever seen one.
But not when you've established a world where it works.
Yeah, she's getting filled with so much cum that it's coming out of her eyes. There's too much cum.
Well, you got to accept the French shit when you're hanging out with French people.
I suppose. But yes, The Beast here, starring Léa Seydoux and a friend of ours from New York.
Oh my God. Gotta say, as far as a dumbass stunt moment, fucking great. Great.
Words, though. I mean, you know who we're talking about. And She worked perfectly in the scene. It's gonna be better than Celine Song's new fucking movie, I'll tell you that much. But
well, we'll see. If she can make a movie worse than her last one, I will truly be there first in line to watch that happen.
Yeah, I don't know if our pal can help make that one feel dangerous or not, but for what it's supposed to do in this movie, her cameo is quite good, and that's during a certain scene, which we get to. So, The Beast. This is a movie dealing with a character, if you don't know what it is, a character who is, what is the year, 2055 or something like that?
That depends on, but we're 2045 or 44 to start. 44.
So the movie takes place in a future where, well, depending on how you want to look at it, but technically it's supposed to take place in a future where a woman who's an actress, some degree.
Model.
Yes, who's trying to become an actress. Very similar to Maxine. There's a lot of actual threads between the two.
There's so much literally and going into what we were talking about with what we don't like about Maxine. So.
Right. So she is at some point in this existence of this future, a cultural thing that has become a fun. It's kind of like the Ozempic of 2045 is you go, and if you're depressed, you can go to this place that will essentially run through all of your past lives and help you cure things about instances that went wrong in your past lives to help cure your anxiety and fears in your present self. That's the best way I can.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
I can say it. And the movie hops between Leah's past lives. One takes place, and they're very filmic. Like, there's something very cinematic about what he's trying to do here, because the first one takes place in, like, what feels like Jacques Rivette's Duchess of Langeais. Like, you know, you're immediately put into this old, you know, late 18th or late 19th century kind of, like, French drawing room. And it's at this point that we meet a character that she, a man that she seems to have known, but she can't remember why she knows him. So what happens essentially is sort of a, it, best way I can describe it, although it's nothing like it, is sort of an eternal sunshine of the spotless mind of her character running through these past lives in kind of a disjumbled manner, which only adds to the, like, time hopping deliriousness of it, where she's starting to suspect that the reason she knows this guy is she was in love with him in a past life. But throughout their past lives, they always meet, maybe through fate, but things don't really ever work out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, go ahead.
Well, and what she's starting to think is, if, I guess the real crux of the movie is, who is this man? What is her relationship to him? How is this going to end? And what is the end goal of this treatment? Because I don't want to spoil the ending, but it's one of the most horrifyingly, if you'll make it, yeah, horrifying endings ever. And she starts to suspect, is there something that this thing is doing that is making people less than human?
Yeah, because it's worth noting as well, the reason she is even exploring doing this thing that the vast majority of the population has already done, is basically what we learn, is that the only way you can have a job that isn't just, like, right, brutally menial, which hers is sitting by a giant cube and checking its temperature, like, every couple hours, and then she sits in a fucking chair. And that is the only kind of job she's allowed, because what the scientists have said is, we no longer allow emotions to affect decisions when they're important. So unless you
can't
do
be
this,
messy, you can't be messy.
Unless you do this where we even you out completely and you don't have emotions anymore, you can't do anything but that job forever. Yep. And yeah. It's such a, it's also just such a refreshing example of how you can do high concept science fiction without being a fucking turd about it.
Yeah, you can make it fun. I mean, you can make it really fun. I mean,
and it doesn't have to be that. Like, this is a movie that again I really love because, well, Bunuel, all of his shit, but he respects the fuck out of his audience. He really says, y'all are not dolts, you can keep up. We're gonna hop around. I'm never gonna tell you when we're hopping. You can keep up, and I'm gonna give you this big sci-fi ship, and I'm gonna give it to you quick, and you will be fine.
Yeah, because there is sci-fi, there's romance, there's comedy,
there's fucking genre all over. There's this
slasher moment. If you wanted to see, like, if the return was, maybe not just the return was filtered into Scream.
Mm-hmm.
We have a movie to sell you. So
we also, just on that note, I guess we should get out of the way relatively quick so we don't get caught on it. But as we were saying with Ty West and his pastiche, this movie instead is an incredible example of saying, cool, I read this old ass book, this old Henry James book. Cool idea. Great. Let's start thinking about that. I'm going to rewatch all my favorite David Lynch things as well. Let's start thinking about that. And you grab shit from Lost Highway, from Mulholland, from The Return, from Inland Empire, all that shit, put it in that fucking blender, but you also put in 80% of all of your own ideas of how to tell this fucking story. And yeah, it is incredible how he balances it.
And Bunuel, this is a perfect example of someone who understands. He probably doesn't have to revisit these movies. Like, yes, that dude knows Lynch. I mean, he's talked a lot about how The Return is one of the greatest things that has ever happened. So, I mean, like, he's fully cooked in. I mean, he's a very smart filmmaker who has always seen his scripts as jumping off points of things that need to be sculpted into a clear form. And then he almost gets rid of all the pathways that connect it. So there is a disjointedness, but the difference between this and Maxine is that this guy knows why he erased certain pathways to get you to this, because he's making you leap the pathways with your own fucking imagination and brain to figure out, instead of saying, here's a clear way to go straight to this. You have to jump gaps in his movies, which is why we have brains. So
and it also, again, we will not spoil the ending as much as I want to, but to earn the emotional wallop and the, you know, the quiver cry that came out of me this morning when I got to that ending, that only happens if you've forced us to take those jumps along this journey so that our brains start to work like hers is, as she's trying to figure out this fucking worlds, I guess, figure out these worlds and where she belongs in it. Because if you don't do that, then that ending doesn't hit, right? I don't think it would be bad, but without the way he makes our brains change to even just watch this movie, you know, then you can't really get there to the level of emotion that he pulls off.
Right. And he's also not busy trying to, like, excavate the Reagan era. You know, this guy is, like, trying to talk about where we are right now.
Yeah. And also with being able to do funny little moments about, you know, different times throughout history, but without getting caught in the weeds with it, with signifiers like that, right? Like, she goes to these clubs that are all just the name of a year, right? So there's like a 70, there's like what, like a 71, there's an 80s one. But anyway, and each of them are designed slightly differently, but clearly in the same room, clearly with the same ins and outs, how the people get there, bartenders are in the same place, but there's enough things there to, you know, give you a joke and also let you clearly know how this dude feels about how much humans have changed throughout history, which is not much.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. And that all these little years that she go to kind of corresponds with, like, past films of his. Like, they all kind of correspond with, like, either Saint Laurent or the pornographer. But yeah, no, everything in this movie is a love letter to movies, which is becoming a more annoying phrase by the day.
But in the real way, where it's still a fucking movie while you're watching it, right? That stuff comes, in my opinion, when you leave the theater, which is how you do that correctly. It's not so that people in the theater go, oh my God, yep, I remember that. I got that. Yep. got that. You don't do that because you're so emotionally invested and because he's smart enough to put in those jumps. So your brain is trying to keep up. So you don't even have time to do that. And it's when you're going home after it thinking that all that shit starts to sink in. And it's just beautiful icing on top.
Yeah, you're starting to think like, oh, yeah, like this guy clearly loves Dario Argento's Inferno. We get an underwater scene. And then we also remember that he paid homage to the credits of Inferno at the end of Nocturama. So, you know, this guy is able to play with all the things he loves, but he gives things a reason to exist there. And
not for cool points. Nothing happens in his movies for cool points.
You do have to make a leap in your mind to get where he's going. Not a leap, but you have to use your reasoning. You don't have this house from Psycho. You don't have the stairway leading up to the house from Body Double. Also, more underrated, 8 Million Ways to Die. But you don't get any of that. It's all in your own, his trust and your own understanding that you've seen some of the more essential building blocks of cinema. And also if you've seen his cinema, because like you don't have to have watched Coma to get to this, but it will be a better experience because you'll see similar characters. You'll see why that doll thing, that incredible doll,
oh my God,
is there. You'll So yeah, I mean, Coma is kind of a little mini masterpiece of like having to do things completely, to do things quickly and with very limited means.
Mm-hmm. And also that this is astonishing as far as if you are interested in making movies that actually don't take place in that many different locations, but feel like they take place in a million locations and a million times, but really there aren't that many different rooms that we spend time in this, but it feels so big.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's there's very few that make them like this anymore. And I don't know, if you want something that's going to break your brain in the best possible way, make you feel every emotion that surges through us, you know, and where we are in a world that is getting homogenized with its opinions, with its emotions, with its ways of viewing the world, with its tastes. This is a movie that's sort of calling into question maybe what we've bought into in this world to bring us to where we are, and what will the ultimate cost be when we're all sanded down into the same, you know, shape as everyone else. Like, what will become of us? Certainly a guy from France can understand where people in America are coming from, considering the movie takes place in both France and LA, and does a pretty good job of saying it's not really a matter of like nations being, they have their own problems. Like, America is now fading into France, a once empire. And then what happens in the fallout of those places? And for people who have fears and have emotions that are messy, I guess, that are not always what everyone wants to hear, the very fabric of being human.
Yeah.
Is that on the table to be, you know, essentially removed? And I think the opening just does a great way of talking about how fear kind of works. It is it's in us, but it's also a monster that doesn't exist. And, you know, danger is a truly real thing, but being trapped underwater is a dangerous thing, but worrying about things that are going to happen, and this male character in the movie embodies, These are monsters that we react to on a green screen, you know, and we only give as much meaning to what's around us. So it's not trying to just say one thing about shaving away of emotions. It's saying there are issues that we have in our emotions sometimes, but like you can't get rid of them, nor should you want to. But like, what is our fear and how does it prey on us? And that makes it, you know, that rounds the whole thing out. It's really not a black and white movie.
It couldn't be less so. Every single moment, every character, even ones we meet for a split second, no one, nothing is black and white in this, and it is so delicious. It's so refreshing. Even just the way the our main dude, his different parts in this movie, it's pretty astonishing.
His acting too, damn.
Everyone, no complaints on any of the acting here. I guess I'll just say too, because I was trying to get one of my friends to watch this recently, and finally today, and she was like, dude, I just, you know, I can't vibe with that like hard art house shit you love. And I was like, let's be clear. Yes, he functions in that world, but as you already said, this is a comedy. It's also a slasher film in moments. And yes, it can be a very heady art house film, but this is not some, you know, put your nose up, watch at a museum only type movie. This is a movie that is meant to be entertaining and meant to also, you know, make you dig deep within yourself. It's great.
Yeah. And a hard art house shouldn't, I mean, again, a bad art house movie sucks, but on the same page, a bad genre movie sucks. So you need to take hard art house out of your vocabulary and just maybe take a stab at things that might make you, you know, few.
Well, to be fair, the last time she took movie recommendations from me, it was a couple of Diaz movies, and she was like, no, dude, this is not a things I'm interested in. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's your fault. That is 100%
yeah, your fault. Agreed.
This is the difference between us. Will and I have such similarities in taste. But then when it comes to presenting, Will wants to shove you down a hallway. Will wants to kick you down a hallway.
Where all the lights will go out the moment you get thrown. Can't see shit. Love it. Love it.
How about we program a nice atmospheric 70s horror film? Will's like Necromantic 2.
Hey, I'm right about that.
That's our difference. That's the difference between the two.
Well, I'm just saying. You chose a bad example, though, because I will get you on that someday. I'm right about that one. A lot of the shit I like, I completely agree with you.
And on that note.
On that note, we'll wrap it up. It's good to be back. Yep. We'll talk to you all soon and see you at the movies. And, you know, if you buy movies on your shelf.
And also to our Patreon members, I want to say we love you. Thanks for keeping us able to pay for certain things. But feel free to drop us a line. You know, we'll shout it out. Recommend us to people. We don't do enough of this, but you know, definitely, you know, we want to make the podcast happen more. And it's just simply a matter of like how many people are listening, how much time can we give to this. So please, yeah, rate us 5 stars, talk shit on us if you want, but just give us 5 stars. You know, because like this is fun to do and it gets certain things off of our chest, but like I said, you know, we have to do the things that pay us in this stupid world. So
if you really want to help out both of our sweet partners, they are also happier when we do this more, because then we tell them less shit because we get it off our chest here. So you're helping our relationships flourish as well by being our lovely Patreon folks. So we appreciate you.
Yeah, we're going to be able finally, my partner and I, to break down the curtain that we put up dividing the apartment where we never see each other, but we're on both sides of the apartment. We just ask, what do you want for dinner? So help make my relationship real again.
Yep. All right. We'll see y'all soon.
Goodbye.